All right. Welcome to the Labor Beat Radio Show, hosted by enlightenradio.org. You can visit our player at player.enlightenradio.org. It's also at the top of the page of just www.enlightenradio.org. And we have a lengthy series of podcasts that have been going on for years now on podcasts, plural, .enlightenradio.org. And I want to welcome to the program this morning some celebrities from the retired, I used to call it the geezer community, but I know that's, you know, it's not respectful of myself or anybody else. And so just our senior citizens, and especially in the labor movement, the Alliance for Retired Americans has been speaking out way better than AARP ever did, in my view, which was sort of taken over by insurance companies. We have the president of the West Virginia Alliance for Retired Americans, Jeannie Moles. I'm going to already mess up Doreen's last name, Scott. So why don't you introduce Doreen, okay, for us?
Yeah, Doreen Godinez, who is a tireless worker and one of the greatest organizers I know.
All right. And Scott, and my good buddy, Scott Marshall, who's been hosting some of these programs, and we've known each other forever in the labor movement. So, and in the left wing movements as well. So anyway, I want to welcome everybody to the program. I'm going to ask Jenny in a way to open up if she, for a little bit, because she's the president and she's used to doing that. And is very good at it, you know. So, and we have pick anywhere you want in the overall movement in the country. I think everybody senses we're in some kind of crisis. It seems like we're in one more than we're not. But I would like to maybe Jenny open up the discussion on the state of seniors and some of the tasks that need to be addressed and her vision of where we need to go. Welcome, Jenny.
Thanks, John. I'm very happy to be here and also excited to meet a couple of new friends, so that when I leave this program, I will know a couple more people in my life. That's always nice when you get to be a senior in your 70s or 80s or whatever. But, you know, in West Virginia, the Alliance for Retired Americans, it's basically a one-state chapter. Right now, we have a lot of affiliates, our AFT members, IBEW, steelworkers, Eastern Panhandle. In fact, we have included our Central Labor Councils with the AFL. They are actually affiliates as well. Our biggest problem with seniors right now, of course, is Social Security and the threat to its elimination by the Republicans that are in Congress. Praise President Biden for standing firm on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Those are programs that actually people have participated in the Social Security since the 30s. So it's not a giveaway. It is a supplemental insurance program to help people live in their retirement years. Because when it was created, there were no big pensions or government programs to help. A lot of people perished because of that and lived very meager lives. So, you know, those are our main programs to fight to keep those programs alive and actually improve and grow them. The National Alliance does a bang up job, you know, in Congress, trying to keep track and fighting for those programs to stay fast. But they also do a lot of interesting things with fact sheets on you know, the debt ceiling, on Social Security, on a lot of different things that people can have access through the website. In West Virginia, we try to do, you know, getting people active is sometimes a little bit difficult, but we do, our main thing is to do an annual convention to bring people together to try to keep people motivated, to recognize seniors that have participated in advocacy in various ways throughout the state, to recognize them each year. We put a lot of thought and a lot of effort into our program, John. As you know, you've attended a few years. We really create a theme and that applies to seniors, whether it's issues or whatever. We have done extensive programming presentations on ALEC. You know, it's ALEC is such a subliminal threat to us all because of the money that's poured into it. And it has so many tentacles that are in so many different places. It's like, you know, the state family policy, you know, ALEC. It has so many tentacles that actually want to protect the rich and hurt working people and, you know, seniors. So and a lot of money is poured into that. We've done presentations and try to keep track of that and where it's going each year. It's fun. And we look at it actually, you know, that people are retiring, and West Virginia was a big labor state at one time. We were a very democratic state. We have lost all that and become, just like so many other states, a Republican flop hold. That's my term. You know, it's just, it really, really is gone downhill, along with a lot of other states that have, you know, basically been taken over by Republicans that have their personal agendas. So it's a fight. So we have the state chapter and like I said, people retiring. Once people retire, we have the potential of an ARA that has over 60,000 people, because, you know, at one time there was a large labor force in West Virginia as well as other states. And with a decline in manufacturing and other you know, venues in life, people retire and kind of like go off on their own. So, and the active force is not as big as what it was. So in essence, ARA and retirees have the potential and the time and you know, to be directed and excited and motivated to actually still be a participant in what's going on. In fact, it's kind of like, you know, I'd like to say that we still want to participate. We don't want to be an echo to what's happening. We want to still have a voice. And with ARA, that is our voice. Don't let me talk too long, John, because as you know, I can just talk.
All right, point of order. Okay.
Anyway. Unlike the rest of us.
Yeah, right. You know. I used to, in the UE, they used to have you know, time limits on speeches at the microphone, and it took a long time just to learn to stay in the time limits. You know, it's very difficult. Anyway, Doreen, well, you just heard, you know, a pretty accurate description of a challenge here in West Virginia. What's it look like from Indiana?
Well, in Indiana, we had Elmer Blankenship, who was a phenomenal leader, very bright, very intelligent. He had a great vision. We lost him, unfortunately. Then we had Ron move up, who had been our vice president, and him and Elmer had worked together for many years. And then Ron passed away from cancer. So now we have Randy Smith. Randy Smith is a real dynamic activist. He makes sure he always has articles in the newspapers. They have a big dinner for labor activists, and they have great attendance. He's on top of the issues. He is now our chairman of the Indiana Democratic Senior Council as well. We have meetings four times a year in Indianapolis. We have members who come from Evansville, Indiana, and then all the way up here from the north in Indiana who come to that meeting. We have a conference once a year. And we're kind of, after COVID, trying to get everything back on track, as I think most of us are in all the things that we do. But there are a whole lot of great leaders that are on the board. dedicated. Some of those who came from Evansville were from Maytag. So in Indiana, we've talked to our director for the United Steelworkers, Mike Millsap, and he's agreed to pay the fee for Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana, which represents the steelworkers and the retirees in District 7. So we're happy about that. We're in the process of appointing those ARA boards for all three of them. The goal would be to make sure that the members who are assigned as officers to represent us would be activists. We feel that with SOAR and with the Alliance, we need activists. In our district, we have 23 SOAR chapters. So in those chapters, one of our goals was to increase our membership. Another major goal is to make sure that all of those chapter members receive the Friday alerts. We review those at our meetings to let them know which representatives are voting for our issues and which ones are voting against us. We recently had a district conference, and we had about 600 members attend that conference. 51 of them were retirees, as our district director supports retirees and the Alliance. So we were able to speak to Maureen from Washington, D.C., and Julie Stein from Pittsburgh, and get copies of the voting record. We also have SOAR Summer School here, and for our retirees who attend that, we give those members who attend those voting records. Scott will be doing a political presentation for us there as a presenter. So our goal is to let our people know that we understand people have a right, and we respect that right to vote for the representatives who they feel represent their issues. However, we don't want them to believe all the BS from any representative who's going to tell you, oh yes, vote for me, I'm for you. We want them to see the record. Are they voting for you? Are they voting against you? And then you decide who's best representing you and your family and your friends and your neighbors in our country. So every time we get a Friday alert, we go over those items that are important. So we feel that activism is the way to start moving us in the right direction, but you can only do that if you inform people and give them the facts, and then they will make their decision. So we have several goals, and we're working on them, and we're making progress. And we encourage people, maybe some people think that this would be negative, but I think of it as positive. We make sure they get the copy in hand of those Friday alerts so that they can call their friends, family, and neighbors in the other states. Because you can tell people things in a meeting, but I know I'm terrible at remembering names. And then I couldn't remember all the bills, and, you know, I just wouldn't have the ability to do that. So we give them the hard copies. And we tell them, hey, make sure you call your friends, your families, members in those states, give them the names of the representatives, and then tell them to vote for this, or tell them to write them a letter and say, why are you voting against us? You know, because we want the not only the information out there, but we want those votes affected across the nation where we can. So I know we have a long way to go, but we do have a few goals that we're trying to reach, and we are moving towards that. So and the people that we are asking, I'm currently working on the list for those members for the ARA in each state, and I will turn them into our director because he will do final approval. But those people, we want to be activists, so that, like Scott Marshall, he has always gone out of his way to go to everything that's important across the United States. I'm not really one that likes to travel everywhere, you know. I stay real busy right here traveling from our SOAR chapters and to our Alliance, you know. So that keeps me busy. And so for those who like to do the traveling and who can speak well for us and who can bring back and share information with us that we can feed to our members. Those are the people that we'd like to get on those lists and be able to have them to go. They may go from, Scott may end up going to one from to Wisconsin or to Indiana, even though he lives in Illinois, you know, if something important comes up for us. But we want the right people in place, so we're working on that. I think I've said enough. Thank you.
Okay. By the way, is Evansville different than Evanston?
Yes, it is. Evanston is in Illinois, and Evansville is in Indiana.
Okay. All right. My sister was born in Evansville. Yeah, and I was born on the other side of Kentucky, you know, and Ashland, you know. But anyway, this was I had never heard of Evansville in a long time, you know, since other than when my sister mentioned that she was born there. On the Social Security, I think it would be important. I mean, especially as an action item, we're going to have a meeting this coming Sunday in here in the Eastern Panhandle with our hopefully some activists, as you mentioned, people who indicated an interest in wanting to help build the ARA. But it seems to me that clearly identifying the threat to Social Security in the Republican agenda, what it actually is, because I find that a lot of people don't understand it. I got to tell you, I don't entirely understand it myself. And I read a lot of economics. But I think it would be that would be an important issue to develop, that every senior, mostly without exception, has a direct interest in. And I really like the idea of putting the facts before people in a way that allows them to make decisions. Yes, Scott, go ahead.
I forgot to mention that I'm also on the Illinois ARA board, and one of the things too that I think the ARAs all do that's really important is I'm on, I don't know what they call it, but it's the committee that looks at who's running for office and what they stand for and who we should be supporting and that kind of stuff. And it's really, that's really an interesting committee to be on, because it's, you know, I mean, all of our organizations have people on both sides of the aisle. There's no doubt about that. But what really gets to me is that among seniors, it seems very likely that people can come together on things, and we do. And, you know, everything is based on the candidates' positions on things. So if you have a candidate that wants to cut Social Security, you're not going to get Republicans members to endorse that candidate kind of thing. Right. So it's, you know, it really is important. And I wanted to say one other thing that I got kicked upstairs to in SOAR to the vice presidency.
VP.
VP. Yeah, I couldn't remember what that was. We're stressing that all over the country, in all of our districts, that people need to be involved in the ARA and all of that. And just consider yourselves lucky that I got it as ARA and not NRA.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. So, Jenny, for example, the Social Security issue is relevant to the federal elections. You know, our Congress and Senate thing, and directly, right? Because they're going to be the ones that vote on it. What issue, like below that level, though? There's a lot of local politics, right? I mean, and all someone said all politics is local. What are the unifying themes, you think, in terms of the state legislatures, you know, that where people are going to be able to make more day-to-day kind of living problem issues. Where do you think with that unity theme would play best there?
You know, John, it's kind of like with ARA, we kind of like our state Fed is very good to us and we kind of like take their lead. They do, you know, the voting record, as you know, and we follow through. I know that we do have some, you know, this is a word that some decent Republicans in our state legislature. There's not a majority of them, but then, you know, in all fairness, and I have been a Democrat all my life, we've had some bad Democrats too. If we'd always had good Democrats and they controlled a long time, state employees would have collective bargaining. Now, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would.
Yes, they would, and they don't. So, you know, you can't really say that Democrats are great and Republicans are bad because it's like it's an individual thing. We got some good and bad in both. And I think that our state Fed may be looking at the big picture and how to get things done for working people in the state. And therefore, ARA in West Virginia would follow their lead and support those candidates that, you know, are, you know, willing to at least, you know, do something for working people here and for retirees. It, you know, some of the people in the legislature are military retirees, and that I am as well a military retiree. And it's like, you know, we all can kind of like find something to agree on if we are calm enough to have a conversation. And I think that's where we need to start. We need to find the things that we can agree on and work from there. It's kind of like I have, you know, one guy that I served with in the military that is a staunch Republican. He and I, you know, don't agree on anything, but we know that we don't agree on most, but we are willing to have a conversation, and we do have a conversation, you know, on the things that we can agree on. And I think that's where we have to go, not just as a state, but as a nation. I mean, we have to. And you know, seeing Kevin McCarthy again walk out of a meeting with the president, I don't know whether he had a conversion in the White House or what, but it certainly didn't sound like the Kevin McCarthy that needed the Santos to get elected as the Speaker of the House. Now, did it? It sounded like a man that had learned or had a conversation with the president about the future of this country. And that's what we need to go there instead of just fighting all the time.
That's true. He when he went in, he was making one song. When he came out, it was quite a different one. I thought
he had a conversion.
That was, but I don't know whether he's going to sell it. Well, he has to sell it to his crazy caucus there, but we'll see what happens with that. Anyway, I noticed that in the West Virginia legislature, maybe this is, I don't know whether this theme is also true in the Midwest or there were a Republican assault. It's been repeated Republican assaults. Almost not, sometimes it's not so much an assault as it's just, I'm not going to do anything about an emerging problem. You know, if it involves paying more taxes, I don't care. I'm not doing anything about it. And one of those things was the Public Employees Insurance Fund, which also affects retirees, especially in their health care, I believe. And so that's been a big showdown. I think Jenny's right that some of the Republicans that we talked to, for example, during the legislative session, you know, were moved on that, and also on an attempt to cut unemployment benefits roughly in half. I think it was really unbelievable. And we also did some smart politicking and figured out a way to block that. Okay, a lot of it was tactical. You know, getting one guy. I think on the unemployment thing, it was pretty much one fellow on the Republicans that just said no.
It was
just said no. It's not going to go through the committee. You know, so yeah.
Right. And the author of that bill is a doctor, and you would think that he would be a little bit more concerned with people.
Yeah. Well. You know, the doctor, doctoring is a business a little bit too. So I don't know. In Indiana, what are the state legislative, how's that shaping up in terms of you know, seniors and our ability to influence it?
Well, I really couldn't speak a lot to that. I know we've been working a lot on trying to get seniors to have a choice on what happens to them versus a doctor saying you have to go to a nursing home and you saying I want this particular person to care for me and I want to be in my home, your right to choice and decision. We've been working on that a lot. When I spoke about the Indiana Democratic Senior Caucus, that's another avenue we've been trying to make some changes, because it's unusual that even though we're 40% of the vote, we do not have voice and vote yet. And we've been fighting that. So I'm hoping we're going to get that soon, because if they think we're going to give up, they're wrong. If they think that they can block us, they're wrong. If we have to go over that wall, under that wall, around that wall, or through that wall, we're going to get voice and vote. And so it just depends on, do they want to do it the easier way and hopefully more timely, or do they want to do it the rougher way, you know, and have to pay for making the seniors wait to have a voice and vote. Across the state, we've been trying to get people, not only in the steelworkers, but on the Indiana Senior Council and on the Alliance, to get friendly representatives for our members, for our communities, for our nation, that are trying to help people. So I can't say that we've been a great success at all of that. Indiana's mostly Republican state, and I don't care if it's unemployment or workers' compensation. I don't care what the major issue is. You can bet your bottom dollar we're in the bottom five and usually the second to the bottom on representing our people well. But we are making progress in identifying and looking at data, which I'm glad they're finally looking at data, to figure out how we can make an impact and make a change across the board, little by little, for our people. I live in a little town called Knox, Indiana, which I was so proud, because the first time in my life that I ever lived in a completely Democratic town. Wow. It was like a miracle, and I was grateful for it, you know. And when I was moved here, everybody said, well, if you're Republican, you ain't got a chance unless you're friendly with the Democrats here. We're Democrats. Well, the last election in this little town, they voted 76% Republican. It was a shocker. You know, when we moved here, there was only 3,000 something people. 1 year we were the fastest growing city in all of our state. We have well over 26,000 members here. And I actually did win an election here to be on a central committee. So I've been on that for the last two elections. But this last time I won because no Republican ran for that third seat. So right. Nothing to brag about.
You know, we have the inverse problem here in West Virginia. We have a lot of seats in the legislature that were not challenged. The Republican ran unopposed. I'm not sure what all the reasons for this, you know, steady decline is. I mean, I know what happened in Jefferson County, that I got a picture of part of what happened here. But it's true that the Democratic Party organization in some states is has lost its footing in the working class a little bit. You know, I mean, not altogether, but there's something that's happened,
more inclusion.
Yeah, I think there has to be a way to focus on the common ground issues without everybody shooting each other over social.
We also seem to have a parade of candidates, or actually elected officials, that were elected as Democrats, and they marched to the voters registration office and changed to Republicans after they're elected.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, I didn't know
that. I mean,
it's
kind of like, and here's the situation, and I don't know whether this is all public information or not, But we have a local judge on the circuit judge who are all nonpartisan, because that was a major Republican movement, was to make all judicial, the magistrates and as well as circuit judges, nonpartisan races. So they are elected, you know, without an RRD behind their name. Well, a member of the state legislature, Republican, got a bill passed that, or was working on a bill to be passed. I don't know whether they got it passed or not, to where all nonpartisan candidates have to list whether they are registered as a Republican or a Democrat after their name on the ballot, even though it's a nonpartisan race. And they were going to target this one female judge, circuit judge in our county, in Kanawha County. She is so slick. She said, oh, you want to target me? Fine. She went and changed her registration from Democrat to Republican, said, go for it, guys. Put your big boy pants on and come after me if you want to. But, I mean, they do. There's a parade to the voters' registration for them to change their, you know. I mean, our governor did it within 6 months at a Trump rally. Come on.
He did. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it should be a requirement that judges indicate whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And I think that because when we go to the polls, we don't know what their caseload is. We don't know what they've done. And actually, a lot of times we don't even know who the judges are until we're looking at the ballot. I'd like to know in advance who they are. I'd like to know what some of those cases are before I decide which way I want to vote, because I want to know who's putting poor people in prison all the time for something that they'd let some rich person, you know, a little smack on the hand type of thing, but yet they'll throw another human being's life and family's life in the trash for decades. You know, I think that needs to stop. And if we don't know who they are in advance, we don't know what their party is, we can't go on the internet and do some research to decide if we're making a good decision on that vote. I think mm-hmm. that should be a major thing across the nation.
Well, see, our Democrat executive committees really work hard to get that information out. They really, really do. I have served on our county Democratic executive committee for 20 years. And I didn't run this last time, but they kind of like, they changed their bylaws to where I'm on a Senate Democratic executive committee, which never meets because we don't have any Democratic senators in my district. So therefore it's like, well, if anybody passes away or resigns, they have to appoint a Republican. So it's like, I'm not going to have anything to do. But regardless of that, our executive committee just incorporated the senatorial district members. So it's like, now I'm back on the executive committee. But my point was, they do a really good job on nonpartisan candidates in doing the research. And we're small enough, Doreen, we're not a big state. We're small enough to where within 6 degrees, we all know each other somehow or you know, can connect with most people. So when a candidate runs, we already know a lot of information, or our friend or our cousin or somebody knows that person in a local neighborhood. I mean, I guess that is a benefit of being a very small state.
See, I'm figuring that there's got to be a better way to do this, because I'd like the steelworkers to do this. I'd like the alliance to do this. I'd like somebody who's big do this, you know, like go state by state. And then, like the Bar Association has the names of attorneys. There should be a place where we could get information for every person who's an attorney or every person who's a judge in the state, you know, and then be able to pass that out to our leadership so they could do some research so that we could, you know, do some information out there so people will at least be informed about that. I'm thinking there's got to be somebody who knows mm-hmm. how to do that. That somebody's not me, because I don't know how to do it. If I did know how to do it, I would do that for the state of Indiana. And then I'd work on the state of Illinois, or try to find somebody in Illinois to do that, or Wisconsin to do that.
Well, your executive committees, you know, your counties or districts or whatever, however they're set up, or your state executive committee should have access to your voter registration file to where they could, you know, look that information up.
Interesting. By the way, folks, we're at the We got about 5 minutes before we people don't listen to podcasts much over 30 minutes. Anyway, so I think we got to bring it to one last round here, if we could. If you could, thinking about your what would be a light to shine, basically, for the future. And I always think I'm like one of these one of the French Revolution guys, you know, who was trying to attack the Catholic Church at the time, and you know, he was trying to rewrite the Adam and Eve story so that the hero would be Eve, and that said, okay, we all have our immortality now. We don't have to stay in the garden because we can have children and raise generations upon generations and generations. And that would be a sufficient immortality for what they call them back in France, a Republican at the time. So we're leaving a legacy for our children and our families. Be interesting to see how everybody feels about that future. Confident, scared and confident. How do you feel?
Scott, you didn't say anything.
Yeah, I usually talk too much, so you guys are lucky. As John knows well, I'm very optimistic. I think things are really going in a good direction. There's really such an upsurge in organizing, and the labor movement's getting stronger, and you see all these. It was really interesting. I was just at a Amazon place trying to get my laptop fixed, and was talking to the guy there, and I said, "Oh, you know that Starbucks over there? You know they're trying to organize a union, and it looks like they're getting a lot of support." And he said, "Oh yeah, didn't you know we're trying to organize one too?" And, you know, that kind of stuff is just. It's just spreading around a whole lot. And you see all of these drives where all of these places are being organized, and all kinds of different people are being organized. And I just think that's a really good sign. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing was all the energy around the no cuts to Social Security petitions and stuff like that. I mean, there was just so much support for that in Illinois. I'm optimistic, as John well knows.
Yes, you are.
Jenny?
No, Noreen. I think I'm just going to agree with Scott and think that, you know, in West Virginia, it seems like young people are taking an interest in elections and, you know, things that are happening, and, you know, the labor movement. It is promising. It really is very promising, especially in elections here and the labor movement. But it's a feeling and a movement that's growing, and it's very encouraging. It's kind of like as you get older, you think about leaving this earth, and it's like, yeah, it's going to be in good hands.
All right.
I agree. I agree with both of them. Our president, our international president, Tom Conway and Dave McCall, they are SOAR members, Steelworkers Organization for Active Retirees, and they're still active. And we've lowered the number so that people who are 45 or older can join as long as they're with us on the issues. So they've led by example. I've already mentioned our district director had 51 retirees at our conference of 600 people. Mm-hmm. I look at the young leadership that we have today. They are activists. They're running for office. We make phone calls. We knock on doors. We write postcards. We write letters. We visit our representatives, and they are there. I don't worry about what that contract's going to be or the pensions, because I am confident in their ability to lead us. I am very proud of them.
All right. Okay, folks. Well, listen, thank you, Jenny and Doreen, for joining us here today. And
can I make one more?
Oh, sure, Scott.
sorry.
He's found his voice.
One more.
just real quickly, you know, one of the things that both the Amazon and the Starbucks workers are advocating for is that they have national contracts, not individual from store to store. And if you think back on history, that's what led to the, that kind of thinking is what led to the CIO. And then think of what an upsurge came with that. And I think that's going on now too, because they're totally serious. If you talk to them, they're not going to settle for just one contract here and one contract there. They want national contracts.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in some
it was company, nice meeting you.
All right, everybody. So thank you all so much. And my little slogan here is take care of each other. And it's late, but everything comes next.